Everyone deserves the right to get married and live happily ever after.
This morning, the Supreme Court recognized that the Constitution guarantees marriage equality. In doing so, they've reaffirmed that all Americans are entitled to the equal protection of the law, that all people should be treated equally, regardless of who they are or who they love.
President Obama heralding on Friday the Supreme Court ruling affirming gay marriage. The decision noted how far marriage has come in the history of civilization, that the institution was once a symbol of the bondage of brides and grooms, devoid of any emotional component. Love certainly had nothing to do with it. Stephanie Kuntz is the author of the new book, Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage. She says the original bells you might hear at a wedding would sound more like ka-ching than this.
Marriage was far too important a political and economic institution. It's the way that the upper class signed peace treaties and, you know, made war. It's the way that the middle class got business arrangements. For the lower classes, it was the way you got your working partner. Bakers had to marry other bakers, even if they fell in love with somebody who did something else, because you couldn't run a small business without it. Farmers had to marry someone with fields nearby and who was a good worker. So love was considered something that was really kind of different from marriage. Okay, if you fell in love after marriage, but not really the purpose. And there were many places in Europe, in southern France, for example, the idea was that the only place you could find true love was in adultery, because marriage was such a mercenary institution. So adding love to marriage was a big revolutionary change.
In America, how did the impulse of freedom go from being this kind of disruptive impulse in marriage and other institutions to being this icon of traditionalism in the 1950s?
Well, that's a very interesting evolution, because when the idea of love first came out, people were terrified. They said, oh my gosh, what's going to happen to society if my son can say, oh, I don't want to marry that woman, I don't love her? Or what's going to happen when people fall out of love? They're going to want divorce. A woman who was seduced might even refuse to get married. People were really worried about this. But the way they initially handled it, well, there were two ways. One was, you really couldn't escape marriage as long as women were economically and legally dependent on men. And there was a lot of social pressure from elites. It could penalize people who didn't marry or who got divorced. And as late as the 1950s and 60s, so a man who wasn't married or who was divorced was often passed over for a promotion, and a woman was just basically nowhere. But the other way that they, and this is a real major problem for us today when we think about trying to build marriages and sustain marriages based on love, the other way that they tried to finesse the problems was to redefine love as the union of opposites. You fell in love with someone who was totally different from you, and you had to stay together because you couldn't have access to the emotions, the skills, the resources. So here we are today trying to build marriages on the basis of love, but we have two historical definitions of love. One is that it's illicit and exciting because it's illicit. The other is that it's of opposites.
So the Leave It to Beaver, Donna Reed show, Dick Van Dyke show image of the American marriage, and of course that's, you know, all white, is an enshrinement of this idea that, women do one thing and men do another thing, and those are the people you fall in love with, as opposed to recognizing the diversity of our emotions and that all kinds of people fall in love. And in fact, this tradition of the 50s was so fragile, it never had a chance to succeed in the 21st century.
Absolutely. People look back to that as the traditional family, but actually it was probably the only time in history when a vast majority of women did not work, work on farms beside their husbands or work in small businesses, when a man could support a family on his own earnings instead of having child labor. So the male breadwinner family is not the least bit traditional, and it was organized around these very rigid gender roles. You know, back in the 1950s, the average couple married after knowing each other for only 6 months. And, you know, from our modern perspective, how do you get to know a person as an individual? Well, you don't. You in many cases. Now, some people were very lucky, of course, and they did become friends and were able to sustain their marriages. But basically, you married a gender stereotype, and you didn't have a lot to negotiate because it was the man who earned the money. The woman had to depend on him. And all of the messages of the day were that the woman had to adjust to the man's interests. Unlike today, when men and women come in with equal experience, they're both older, more mature, and you have to adjust to each other's.
So how do you view the transition here in the United States of acceptance of same-sex marriage as a civil rights transition that a lot of people describe it as? And of course, the Supreme Court, you know, makes it a legal matter. Or is it part of a broader redefinition of marriage in the face of profoundly different realities in the 21st century from the 1950s?
Well, I think the second is what's there. And I think one of the amusing ironies in all this debate, when people say, oh, my goodness, same-sex marriage will change heterosexual marriage. It's a whole revolution. Actually, the revolution was started by heterosexuals were the ones who first said, well, marriage should be about love. In the late 18th century. And in the early 20th century, we added to this the idea, well, marriage should be based on sexual attraction and sexual fulfillment. In the 1950s and 60s, in the 1950s, it was still very difficult not to have a kid. But then we said, okay, you can marry and you don't have to have a kid. And then we said, marriage, you don't have... If you can have kids, we'll let you have assisted reproduction, which used to be called adultery, and children born from assisted reproduction were considered illegitimate. And so, you know, all of these things began to change the definition of marriage in ways that gays and lesbians were saying, this begins to apply to us. And the final blow was in the 1970s when we repealed all of the laws that said men have one set of duties and they have to perform these, and women have a different set of duties and they should only perform these. We said marriage is an association of two individuals who can choose for themselves what roles they want to play in the marriage. And at this point, I think it was almost inevitable that gays and lesbians would say, hey, you have redefined marriage so much that it's now something we can and should be able to enter.
Stephanie Kuntz is the author of Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage. She's a professor of history and family studies at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington, and director of research and public education for the Council on Contemporary Families. Stephanie, thanks so much.
It was my pleasure.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.